we need to find ways to help our children be happy, healthy, productive members of society in the way that best works for them. And I feel like too many times we ignore the way that best works for them, and we want them to do it the way that works best for us, where you get straight A's so I don't get emails from your teacher, or you go to college to become a doctor so that when I'm out to lunch with my friends, I feel good so I can brag about you. And that all just goes back to what we were talking about before, healing your own inner self, because those desires that you're putting onto your child are meant to fill a void within you.
For most of us, belonging to a stepfamily was never part of the plan. We never planned to get divorced, never planned to fall in love with somebody who already had kids and an ex-spouse who's not going anywhere. But here we are, trying our best to solve the blended family puzzle. I'm Brittany Lynch, and for the last 15 years, I've been working with the human body, mind, and spirit. As a certified stepfamily counselor, mental health nurse, and having been a stepmom myself for the last decade, I've learned that happy stepfamilies are built by healthy people. Welcome to the Whole Stepfamily Podcast, where you will learn how to create peaceful, loving, authentic stepfamily relationships that allow you to be who you really are, so you can love the life you live and the people you live it with.
As we wait on the timing, together we find it, there's more than one way to go home.
Hello and welcome to the Whole Step Family Podcast. I am your host, Brittany Lynch, and you guys, I'm so stinking excited. I know I say this every single time, but I'm so excited because we have a guy here, guys. Ladies, gentlemen, we have a guy. We have a guy here to talk to us about parenting. Ben Pugh, welcome to the show. We're very excited. We're very excited around here to have a conversation with you for many reasons that we're going to get into. But before we get into all of those, why don't you let us know who you are? Where are you from? What do you do? Who is Ben Pugh?
Yeah, so I'm Ben Pugh. I'm not an English soccer player or actor. I'm just Ben Pugh from the US. I am a parenting coach, and I also coach teens. And I kind of got into this. So I'm in Utah, and I got into coaching because I was a high school principal, and I just really didn't like the direction education was going. I felt like I wasn't able to help the ways that I wanted to. And I learned about life coaching, and I was like, oh, I could totally help teens and I could help their parents. So I started a podcast, I started a business. And one of the things that sets me apart from other parenting gurus, parenting coaches, I was personally a teenage knucklehead. I accidentally lit my school bus on fire with rubber cement when I was 13, and it was a whole thing. And I've gone on to be successful. My wife and I were foster parents for 10 years. And like you talk to step families, we're not a step family, but man, foster parenting has a lot of the same traumas and struggles. And it just, that really helped me between being a knucklehead teenager and being a foster parent. I feel like that gave me superpowers when I was a principal that really helped me be good at my job. And now my goal in life is to just take all these skills and these ways of being that I've learned and share them with as many parents and as many teens as possible.
How does one accidentally set their school bus on fire?
Okay, yeah, so it's funny. So this always comes up, but this is very important to who I am. But when I was a teen, I didn't really feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like I belonged. I had childhood trauma of my own and just made dumb decisions. And it's funny, I spoke at a graduation a few years ago, and I invited my mom to come listen to me. And I looked down, and I'm sharing the story about the school bus on fire, and she's just beat red. Like, it was traumatic for me. It was traumatic for her. She's still working through it, but for me, one of my friends stole some rubber cement from the school. I don't know why. Back in the 90s, we used rubber cement for everything. We'd like glue stuff together at school. I'm probably the one that ruined that. Sorry. But my friend stole it and was like, hey, Ben, you've got a backpack. Will you hold on to my rubber cement for the day? And I kept it in my backpack and I felt so guilty. Like knowing what I know now, I'm like, I was totally out of alignment with who I wanted to be. And I just didn't know back then. Anyways, I had it in my backpack. I felt guilty all day. On the bus ride home, towards the end of the bus ride, so like, fortunately, the bus wasn't full of kids, and all the good kids are in the back, or in the front, and us knuckleheads were in the back, just being dumb. Anyways, my friend's like, hey, do you have my rubber cement? And I was just happy to get rid of it. So I'm rummaging around in my backpack. I get it out, and one of my other friends is like, hey, open that bottle of rubber cement. I've got a lighter. Let's see what happens. And I don't know if you've used rubber cement. It's like the consistency of snot. So I like pull out the brush and there's this snotty string and my friend lights it on fire. And that thing went up in flames so fast. It's like, and we're like, oh, what do we do? And we're like spilling flaming rubber cement all over the back of the bus. And so I try and throw it out the bus window. That's like that big. And I totally miss, and I hit the little bar, and it sent flaming rubber cement all over the back of the bus. Fortunately, I was the youngest one involved and the stupidest one involved, so I didn't get in as much trouble as the older two boys. But that experience helped me as a principal. I did everything in my power not to suspend kids. I'm like, no, like, I'm not going to reward you by kicking you out of school for a while. I'm going to make you hang out with me all day, every day. Like, let's do this together. And I can honestly say my teenage struggles have become my adult strengths. And anyways, that's how you accidentally light a school bus on fire with rubber cement. I should have prefaced this by don't try this at home, but you know.
I don't even know where to get rid of rubber cement anymore. I want to go back to what you just said about how the things that made you a knucklehead, as you say, in as a teen, have become your greatest strengths. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I actually think in today's world, especially more today, with social media and just the way media presents its version of reality, I think there's a really big push to pretend that we have a picture perfect life that would fit into the movies, and that it, like, oh, the neighbors went on vacation, we need to go on vacation so we can take pictures and put them on social media too. And the thing that I've come to realize, if you went to a movie that was perfect, it would suck. Everyone would hate the movie. There wouldn't be anything exciting. But if you went to a movie where the 13-year-old accidentally lit a school bus on fire and was grounded and got his butt kicked and somehow pulled it all together and then was a high school principal, and then, like, that would be an exciting movie. And our teens have the misfortune of being raised in this time where everyone is pushing them to be perfect, and they're not being allowed the imperfect moments, or they're being told to hide and be ashamed of the imperfect moments rather than being given the opportunity to learn from those. And when I work with teens, like, one of the best things I can do, like, if I'm working with a knucklehead, I can be like, dude, I was a knucklehead. Don't try that crap on me. I invented it. Like, they're like, oh, okay, this dude gets me. And just having the faith, a lot of the parents that I work with, their kids hate school and they're worried, like, oh no, my kid's gonna live in a box and be a complete failure because they hate school. And I get to be kind of the poster child that's on the other side that's like, no, I hated school. I graduated with like a 2.0, I don't know, like the bare minimum so I could play football, and I turned out fine. And kind of being able to showcase, like, here's all the things I struggled with. The ACEs, you mentioned that little test. Like, I have a score of, like, I think it's 7. And I'm perfectly fine. And I like being able to showcase, like, look, guys, your teen can be a complete knucklehead. Don't give up on them. And one of the biggest things I teach parents is quit trying to fix or change or control your teen. Recapture all of that energy and bring it inward and be the change that you want to see, because your model, your example will impact your teen more than a 2-hour yelling and lecture session.
I have so many directions that I want to take this. One of the parenting coaches in our community says is we have to remember that our kids are going to be adults for so much longer than they are going to be kids. And we have so much pressure on ourselves because of social expectation, social media, like you said, to have these perfect families. That I think that we can not lose sight of it so much as maybe not even just realize the fact that we're put so much energy into these early years, and we put so much pressure on ourselves as parents, and we put so much pressure on our kids as kids to like have really perfect childhoods. But as you are showing us and explaining to us, like, not only are these imperfections or whoopsies, mishaps, lighting buses on fire in adolescence important for learning lessons, but also they're not going to determine who your child is going to be in adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you just said it so perfectly. I don't even know what I could add. I guess one of the things that I would say, I should have memorized this quote. I think his name is like Joseph Chilton Pierce. He talked about one of the most powerful things, or the best thing you can do as a parent, is to be the adult you want your child to grow up to be. Like, you're just modeling, you're living by example. Another thing that I talk about often, we've been brainwashed into this idea of perfect parenting. And here's the right way to parent, here's the wrong way. And everyone's trying so hard to parent perfectly that they're missing the opportunity that comes from imperfect parenting moments. And I actually believe that it's our imperfect parenting moments, like, those have more impact on our teens. And our imperfect parenting moments, like, if we're responsible and we'll like apologize and come back into alignment and make things right, those are more impactful than if we would have been perfect in the first place. And that's a powerful message to share our teens, because like, one of the things I like to do with my teens, I tell them all the time, like, hey, yesterday, I wasn't ready to talk about this. Like, I yelled. I wasn't who I wanted to be. But looking back, I can see that that is not who I wanted to be. And I apologize, and I want to commit to be better. And I just want you to know this is something I'm working on. Like, that right there is a powerful message from a mom or a dad to a teen that's like, oh, yeah, I knew you're not perfect, but you've never admitted it. So maybe it's okay that I'm not perfect too.
I'm going into my neuroscience geek mode here. I wish I could quote the source of this research, but I learned something very cool about the human brain and something that we have in our brains called mirror neurons. And I learned that when we apologize to our kids, so say we blow up, we act out, we blow up, we yell, we throw things, we do whatever, we say things we don't mean as parents, and then we feel like terrible about it because we don't actually want to say these things or do these things to our kids. Most parents don't apologize because they just want to pretend it never happened, right? Some parents do apologize. Some parents learn the skills to be able to sit with that discomfort and apologize and do, like you said, to say like, hey, I acted out. That wasn't me being my best self. it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to yell, right? Like, it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to scare people. And my anger is my responsibility. This wasn't because of you. This was me and my own anger and not your fault. You didn't do this. And I'm sorry that I made you feel XYZ. When we apologize as parents, if we were kids who didn't get apologized to, we are actually healing the parts of our brains that would have been affected by that trauma in childhood of our parents scaring us with their outbursts. So not only is apologizing to our kids for being imperfect, modeling to them that it's okay to be imperfect, because of the mirror neurons that we have in our brains, it's actually rewiring and healing trauma that we have in our brains from the times our parents did things that traumatized us.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just add to this for a second, because this is blowing my mind. I teach people, like, hey, you can mentally and emotionally go back in time and heal yourself. Like, you can go back in time, give yourself a hug. You can go back in time, make sense of things. One of the things people don't realize, like, whatever struggles you're experiencing right now, like, for me and my clients, like, it's always, oh, my teen did this or my teen that. Sometimes it's like, oh, my spouse or my ex. Those are nothing more. Like, if it's triggering you, that is a part of your subconscious being that was injured in the past and hasn't been healed. And you have another opportunity to heal it by how you handle it in the present. And our children, what we don't understand, they're just giving us our same crap again to heal. And if you don't heal now, that's okay, because you can do it again next year. Or 10 years from now, or like, you will be given the same opportunities to heal. It might look like a different person, might have a different face or different details, but you will be given opportunities over and over and over until you heal. And the cool thing is, so I worked on the Ute Indian tribe. That's where I was a principal. And they would always talk about generational trauma. And in the beginning, I was like, well, that's dumb. You can't just hand down trauma. As I kind of swallowed my own pride and learned, I was like, oh, yeah, I get it. Like, I have generational trauma. Like, some of the things I'm struggling with are things that my mom struggled with, and she learned it from her parents. And it's a real thing. It gets handed down. When you do this healing with this, I can't remember exactly how you said it, but like with the mirroring and the neurons, when you do this healing, not only are you healing yourself, you're offering your child an opportunity to heal, and you may very well be putting an end to some generational trauma, which one of the problems we have in our society is we always focus on the negative. Like, we want to focus on the generational trauma. Well, if that's a thing, then there can also be the opposite of generational trauma. And we see it with wealthy people all the time. Like, they're wealthy, their kids are wealthy, their kids' kids are wealthy, and it just stays with them. And when you can heal yourself, you have the very real opportunity to not only heal and put a stop to generational trauma, but you get to start a generational habit that will benefit you and your family for generations to come.
I'm just giving this a second to sink in here, because yes. And in that way, that generational trauma will like ripple through your lineage. So will the generational healing. And we need to, you know, like also consider the way that this tape plays out, that when we learn how to apologize, we show our kids how to apologize, and then they'll be able to apologize to their kids. And then there, So it's just like this way of healing trauma before it happens.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would have been kind of destined to happen, because that's what people do, is we repeat patterns, we repeat cycles, and we don't realize that we're doing it because we're just doing what our parents did and what their parents did and what their parents did. So we're really like rewriting the future by making these different choices. And that's really stinking important.
Yeah. Let me share a story with you. One of my clients, I'd been working with her for a couple of months. She wasn't making the progress that I wanted. And I realized, like, okay, this is me having an attachment. She wasn't making the... Anyways, we're sitting here working together and she comes to a session and I can tell there's something different. And she just was embarrassed and ashamed. And I'm like, no, tell me, like, what's going on? What is this thing that you don't want to talk about? And she's like, I'm a terrible mother. And I'm like, tell me more. Like, everyone thinks they're a terrible mom. And she's like, no, I threw a shoe at my son and I nailed him right in the face. And I laugh about it because similar things have happened to me in the past, but I'm like, oh, okay. What if that doesn't make you a terrible mom? And she's like, no, it does. And I'm like, why does that make you a terrible mom? First, she was more worried about what other people would think about her if they knew that she had done that. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, what other people think is irrelevant. And usually you don't know what they're thinking. You're just projecting your own thoughts onto them. So like, if other people were thinking, oh my goodness, she's a terrible mother, like, why would you feel that? And she's like, because they'd be right. And she went through all the stuff, letting go of, oh, I don't need to worry about what other people are thinking. And what she realized was, oh, that's not who I want to be as a mom. It's like, okay, well, how do you know that? And she's like, because in the moment I was so mad, I wasn't even thinking. As soon as I let go of the shoe, I instantly regretted it. I was like, awesome. All that is just a feeling telling you, hey, this being right here, the way that we're behaving, this is not in alignment with who we want to be. And she's like, it's that simple. Like, I can just learn from how I feel in the moment. And that's when she really started making progress. Cause I was like, hey, if that was out of alignment, like, we can't go back and undo the past. None of us have a time machine. With that being our current reality, now what feels like it would be in alignment? She's like, I just want to give him the biggest hug. I just want to apologize. She came back the next week and she's like, we hugged, we cried. Our relationship has been better in this past week than it has been for years. And she made more progress in that 1 week than she had the whole time we'd been working before, because she went through an experience that was, I don't know, it was harmful to her. It was harmful to her son. But going through the experience of healing from that, all of a sudden, she was able to move on and heal from other things. And I think sometimes as parents, we're trying so hard to be perfect that we don't give ourselves the grace to understand, oh, I have imperfect parenting moments all the time. And all those are markers along the way, helping me stay on course. Like, ooh, I didn't like how that made me feel. Next time I'm going to try handling it differently. And when this mom apologized, she's like, that felt so right. Like, she wasn't familiar with who she wanted to be because she is so worried about not being who she didn't want to be that she had never taken the time to clearly define, this is my role as a mom. This is who I want to be. And then once she could parent in line with that identity, that the thing about energy is it's healing. And the more you can be in energy that excites you, energy that's fun and playful, energy that's hopeful, those energies will heal past wounds. And for this mom, when she could get into that, like, she all of a sudden kind of let that be her compass through life, and she would follow her energy that would just let her know, oh, this is what I feel drawn to do in this moment as your mom. And that was life-changing for her and her team.
I think what's coming up for me is that there's almost like a discrepancy between, you know, every parent, every step parent, arguably most of them, our goal raising the generation of children that we raise is to arguably raise responsible, productive members of society. That's what everyone who is a parent in whatever capacity is probably desiring to do in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so we fall under the kind of thumb of the social prescription of what we think we're supposed to do as parents in order to raise responsible, productive members of society. And what that does to us is it turns us into controlling monsters who are so intense about making sure that we are correcting every single tiny behavior that our kids are demonstrating that might in some way, shape, or form be attached to something we think is going to make them live in our basement until they're 50 or never get a job or become XYZ judgment that we're putting onto them. But when it comes to raising good kids, responsible, productive members of society who are emotionally intelligent and they're not little jerks, the way we do that is by being fun parents, by being loving parents, by being forgiving parents, by being parents who aren't super controlling. So talk to me about how do we reconcile this dilemma of, you know, the way we think we're supposed to parent to raise good kids is actually realistically not that because it's so mother stinking stressful.
Yeah. Well, one of the things when you talked about like raising healthy, happy, productive members of society, a couple of things came up with that. Number one, what we define as healthy, happy, productive members of society, I would question that definition. Like most people in the world, like most people are in debt. Okay, let's just talk about the US. Most people are in debt. Most people are overweight and most people are extremely unhappy. And we, for some reason, think, oh, well, that's the definition of happy, healthy, productive member of society. And that's kind of what we're trying to force onto our children. I know, sucky, right? But here's the other thing that I would point out. Aside from that crappy definition that kind of exists in our reality, every child that I know of instinctually, naturally wants to be a happy, healthy, productive member of society. And our kids are losing that because we're brainwashing them through our own expectations, social media, school, church, like whatever it is, like we're brainwashing them that, no, this is how you should be. And what I believe is that if we just trust that, no, every kid wants to be happy, healthy, and a productive member of society. As parents, we need to find ways to help our children be happy, healthy, productive members of society in the way that best works for them. And I feel like too many times we ignore the way that best works for them and we want them to do it the way that works best for us, where you get straight A's so I don't get emails from your teacher, or you go to college to become a doctor so that when I'm out to lunch with my friends, I feel good so I can brag about you. And that all just goes back to what we were talking about before, healing your own inner self, because those desires that you're putting on to your child are meant to fill a void within you. And it's not your child's job to fill that void within you. You have to be the one to fill that void. And one of the things that I found, so I work with a lot of teens that hate school right now. They see no purpose in it. If you don't see a purpose in your life, there's a really good chance that you will be depressed, anxious, and unhappy. And a lot of the parents that I talk to, they don't see a purpose in their own lives. That's why when I work with parents, like one of the first things we do is create a vision statement for yourself. I have mine posted all throughout the house. My most current one is parenting with love, confidence, and curiosity is easy and fun. What this does is it gives me purpose. It gives me purpose in the best of parenting moments. It gives me purpose in the worst of parenting moments. But with that purpose, I feel hope. I feel like not even driven, like drawn, like pulled to something. And that's one of the things as a parent, the biggest advice that I would give you, let go of your teen. Stop trying to fix, stop trying to control them. If you have a step family, it might not be your teen. It might be your ex that you need to let go of and stop trying to control or fix or change and redirect all of that energy into being the version of you that you've only dreamed of. Like, man, if I had more money, then I would do this. No, go do that now. Be that person now. And that's where true power comes in parenting. And when you do that, you will have more impact on your child than you ever dreamed possible.
I love this. And what's coming up for me is something that we see in stepfamily dynamics, where because there are different parenting rules, roles, regulations, responsibilities between homes, I've heard so many times from so many people in step families, and this is not coming from a place of judgment so much as it is from a place of like, I've heard this so many times, where parents will say, you know, at the other home, parenting is very lax. They don't have a lot of role. They don't have a lot of rules. The kids can do whatever they want.
They're the fun dad, maybe.
They're the fun dad. They're the fun mom. That's the Disneyland house, right? Like the kids, they don't have a bedtime. They don't have to brush their teeth. They eat chicken nuggets for dinner every single day. They don't make them do their homework. They're da 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 da. The kids are just kind of left to their own devices. And then so what happens is that when the kids go back to the other home, that set of parents or single parent will say something along the lines of, I feel like I need to do 2 weeks of parenting in 1 week. Or I feel like I need to do an entire week of parenting in 1 weekend. And so the energy that happens, or the energy transfer that is happening, is that each time the kids come over, the parents say like, I feel like I have to start at square one. I feel like I have to start over. And they're trying to then like turn the goal of that week into setting the kids straight, or like giving them all of these things to do to like make sure that they're going to be fine, because they have to undo what's happening at the other house. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would say that's one side of the coin. Another side is where you got the fun parents, the Disneyland house, like the fun experience. Well, then the other parent is like, oh, so I need to be fun. I need to take my kid to here. Either way, your focus is on something outside of your control, and you are not being in alignment with who you want to be. One of the principles that I teach, and this would actually, I don't know, if I were to ever like come on here again and share more, one of the things I'd like to talk about is like parenting on the same team rather than parenting on the same page. Those are two different things. And the other one, we'll just talk about this one now. I teach people about how to be in the face of fear. And with parents, a lot of times, like they're afraid of kind of what you talked about, like, oh, my kid will be 50 years old living in my basement and a not productive member of society. When you can identify the fear, it's less scary. And once you've identified the fear, you can identify, well, in the face of that fear, like even if my kid at 50, let's see, at 50, I would probably be, I don't know, like 75 or something. Man, that's kind of scary. Okay. At 50, or he's 50, I'm 75, he's living in my basement. Who do I want to be? Even if that's the case, I want to be my little parenting thing. I want to parent with love, confidence, and curiosity. That still applies even to the thing that I'm afraid of. And you know what? I like to have fun, so I'm just going to find a way to make it as fun as possible. Well, if that way of being applies to the worst case scenario, which I'm afraid of, I want to spend mental time also in the best case scenario. So if the worst case scenario is that he's living in my basement, okay, what's the best case scenario? He's wildly successful and buys me a winter home in Maui. Like, I don't know, like something awesome. Does that same way of being, me being loving, confident, curious, does that apply to the best case scenario? And the answer is always yes. And the power is when you can define, this is who I want to be. Well, if they don't get parented at this home and they don't get taught rules, they don't have any expectations, no bedtime, whatever, who do I want to be when they come to my home? Like, if that's the worst case, who do I want to be still? And then take time to identify, well, what's the best case? Like, what if the home looked exactly the same as mine? They had the same bedtime, the same rules. It's just amazing. Oh, that way of who I want to be is equally applicable. And one of the biggest mistakes that we're making as parents is we are being reactive. We are parenting in reaction to what we see around us, rather than parenting intentionally in line with who we want to be, regardless of what happens around us. And if you can get into intentional parenting, your life will get easier. You will have more energy because what happens outside of you won't matter because you will be you regardless of what's happening outside.
One of the things that brings people to us most often as clients is this realization that in my role as parent, step-parent, co-parent, single parent, divorced parent, not quite a stepmom, but maybe one day I will be one stepmom, is this moment of waking up one day and looking in the mirror and saying, I don't know who I am anymore because this job of parenting has turned me into someone I don't recognize. And I've heard you many times kind of come back to this touchstone of who do I want to be? And the way that we see this in the clients that come to us is this disconnection with who we really are authentically at the core of our being. And what I'm hearing you say is that when we get kind of swept away in whatever parenting things sweep us away, because parenting's hard and it's stressful and it's demanding, and like we're raising kids in a generation where they're attached to their phones all the time and we don't have influence on them the same way that we did in the 90s, that our parents did in the 90s, and then all the generations before that. So we're really raising kids in this unique time, this really crazy time. And we arguably are always parenting with good intentions. We're arguably always parenting because we want to provide our kids with a good life. We want to steer them the right way. We want to let them know that we're there for them. We want them to learn the lessons that we had to learn the hard way without them having to learn that the hard way. And also we disconnect ourselves from who we really are, because the goal of parenting becomes more important than the connection of parenting.
Yeah. Can I touch on that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you are not connected to who you are, you will not be able to connect with your child, and your child will not be able to truly connect with you. And another thing that's true, I'll just give an example that I hear about all the time, like parents wishing their kids would get better grades. No Fs, no behavior at school, like the perfect student. The problem is that's not their child. Their child has two Fs. They're getting in trouble at school. You're getting emails from their teacher. Any energy you spend trying to connect with the version of your child that doesn't exist, the one that gets straight A's and is perfect, that is actually energy not being spent connecting with your child as they are, and that will disconnect you. So in my program, I teach about three fundamental pillars. There's identity, connection, and growth. And if you don't have identity, if you don't know who you are as a parent, you'll be lost. You'll be confused constantly. You'll be second-guessing yourself. If you don't have connection, one of the things that I see all the time, parents lack connection with themselves. And then they let their teens walk all over them because they're trying to get connection from their teen by letting their teen do whatever they want. And the other thing that I see, if parents are lacking growth, and this is a huge one because I don't know where we got this, but we think, well, I'm the adult. I'm all grown up. I know everything. I don't need to grow anymore. Well, if you look at like the plant kingdom, if plants aren't growing, they're dying. And like, it's a usually a pretty short road. Like, oh, you quit growing, you're going to die pretty soon and you'll just be gone. If you're not growing as a parent, you have an inner need to grow. And parents who aren't growing typically try and force that growth onto their children to satisfy their need for growth. And that is when you fall into the controlling parent trap. And all of these traps make it harder for you to connect with your teenager. And so if you can just do your work, don't try and do someone else's work for them. You can't make your spouse parent better. You can't make your kids behave better. Really get clear on what is my work to do. Who do I want to be? How do I want to connect with myself? Loving your teen well starts with loving yourself well. And if you can kind of mold those three pillars into one, you will be an impactful parent and your impact will be felt for generations to come.
I want to talk about these parenting traps, but first I want to talk about something that I believe probably leads into these parenting traps, which is something we hear all the time. My teenager is disrespectful.
Yeah.
Go. Red team, go.
Yeah. If your teen is disrespectful, I hate to tell you this, you can't control your teen. You can't make them respect you. I stole this from Gandhi. I'm sure he stole it from someone before who stole it from someone else. But the best thing I can tell you is be the change you want to see. I teach about a different type of mirroring than from what you were talking about earlier. I believe that human beings are herd animals. All the guys I talk to, they'd rather be like pack animals like wolves. But I grew up milking cows and I don't know, herd animals are just kind of dumb, and that is what makes sense. But one of the things about herd animals, like if you've ever seen a big flock of birds that it looks like a cloud and they're just flying all over and they're not bumping into each other, it's because most herd animals have this trait called mirroring, where they're constantly trying to mirror all the different animals around them. So if the bird swoops right, you swoop right, and you just... you perfectly mirror each other and you work as one giant herd. Well, human beings, we're also really good at mirroring, especially when our teenager is disrespectful. Boom, we mirror that right back and we're disrespectful. Or if our teen is moody, we mirror that right back. And if, like, I love, there's always a balance in the universe. Like when I talked about how most people focus on like the negative, that's just what we do as humans. But if mirroring works a negative, where your teen comes and yells at you and you yell right back, it also works in the positive. If your teen can be disrespectful and you can intentionally be the parent that you want to be and be respectful, that is showing your teen an example that they will subconsciously be more likely to mirror back to you. And I personally... so in my program, I teach about values. I also, when my teens are disrespectful, I like to understand what their top values are. And I like to try and teach my teens according to their values. My oldest right now, his top values are probably his girlfriend, football, and money. Well, I can teach about respect for every single one of those. Like when he yells at me or he's swearing at me or being disrespectful, I'm like, dude, what would happen if you treated your girlfriend that way? And usually he's like, well, I would never treat my girlfriend that way. And I'm like, exactly. Why not? Oh, because she dumped me. Well, if you practice treating me that way, I guarantee you, you're practicing treating someone else that way. And it might be your girlfriend down the road. Or I might ask, like, dude, what if you treated your football coach like that? So I would never do that.
Benched.
Yeah. And I don't have to change him. I'm using his values to teach the lesson that I want him to learn, but it's relevant because it's based on his values. So if your teen is disrespecting you, the two things I would try, modeling the desired behavior, be the change you want to see. Number two, teach according to your teen's values. So that's what I got.
That's so good. That's so smart. Holy moly. What a great angle. I love that. That's so good because we hear this all the time, like that parents are like, they just treat me the worst out of everyone. Right. But you're not wrong in how you do something is how you do everything. Right. And so if we can show our kids, yeah, it might just be me right now. right? Yeah. But you're practicing. You're practicing. You're practicing. Yeah. Okay. Talk to me about parent traps. Talk to me about this.
Yeah. So I have a free quiz. It will help you identify what parent trap you're getting caught in. I've coached a lot of parents. I've kind of narrowed it down to three. There's the controlling parent trap, the doormat parent trap, and the lost and confused parent trap. And if you go to benpewcoaching.com/parent trap quiz, you can go take this quiz. It's completely free, and I'll send you the answer. And you'll know exactly what trap you're getting caught in, which a lot of parents, this is just true for humans. We don't want to know what the problem is. Usually we just want to avoid it, especially if the problem might be us. And I'm not saying you are the problem, but you're part of the equation. And if you can better understand, oh, this is the trap that I'm getting stuck in, you can address the part that you actually have control over, which is you. And the thing that I always say most parenting advice gets wrong is it is more focused on the child than it is on the parent. And most couples coaching or therapy, the thing that it gets wrong is it's more focused on the other person than it is on you. And the parent trap quiz, what it will do is it will help you know exactly and by percentages. So you might be like, oh, well, I'm first and foremost in a controlling parent trap, which is usually the most common. And I'm also in the lost and confused. And once you take the trap or the quiz, you know exactly what trap you're caught in, and you will get access to my free, completely free course, Parenting from the Inside Out. And this is an audio course, so that you can just listen to it. There's a workbook that comes with it. And I have had parents that are in my membership that are working with me that are like, oh, Ben, I love everything you teach, but the thing that's helped me the most was the parent trap quiz and the little audio course. If you want a better relationship with your teen, with your ex, whoever it is, you can apply the parent trap results. And you can start working on getting out of that trap by working on you. You are your biggest asset. Stop wasting your time, your energy, your focus on things outside of your control. Bring it back in. And that's why the course is called Parenting from the Inside Out. But that's the parent traps. That's all that.
Something I say all the time is happy stepfamilies are built by healthy people.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, this invitation to assess what kind of parenting identity you might align with, probably not wanting to. Is really a beautiful opportunity to heal stuff that your kids are showing you is not healed. I think we started talking about this at the beginning. I don't know if it was before you started recording or not. My whole head just, every word fell out and it's just a blank, empty space. Where was I going with that?
I don't know, but let me just like step in. I'll catch you. I'm going to share one thought.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
One of the things that you said, and I might be misquoting you, but like healthy step families are built by healthy people. Is that what you said?
Happy step families are built by healthy people. Yeah.
Okay. Happy step families are built by healthy people. Here's the mistake I see people wanting to make. Oh, well, my ex isn't healthy, or my teen isn't healthy, or you have the power to be the one healthy person that changes everything. And so many times I feel like as human beings, we see everything that's broken around us and things that don't work around us. And we just think, oh, well, I can't fix it and give up. I promise you, you can be the one person that changes everything. And just because someone else isn't healthy, is no excuse for you to not allow yourself to be healthy. Be healthy, be the change you want to see. That is what creates the change from the inside out. And when you change on the inside, everything around you starts to change.
I'm being struck by this. Something that we hear all the time is like, it's not fair that I have to be the one to do this work when everyone else is the problem, right? Like, yeah. Especially step parents, because step parents will come into this situation where, you know, they didn't break it and they're trying to fix it, right? And there's frustration that comes from that because the step parents didn't break it. And then they're trying to fix the thing that they didn't break. And then all this resentment and stuff happens because they want to live in a healthy, happy step family. I don't know what's happening to my head. I don't know what's happening. I can't do it anymore. What's happening to me? Where was I going with this? Oh, about how they don't want to be the one to do the work. We don't want to be the one to do the work, right?
Or it's not fair, yeah.
Or it's not fair. But like, what, how is becoming a healthier, happier person not fair to you?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, investing into your own investment fund. It's not fair. Why am I the only one putting money? Well, you're the only one who's going to get anything out of it. And the other truth is, no one can do this work for you. And yeah, for as much as I, like when I was a foster parent, here's the crazy thing also about foster parenting. I have a decently nice home. Like, it's not rich and fancy or anything, but it's nice. Like, we have heating, we have air conditioning, we have two pinball machines in the basement, a foosball table, a handful of TVs. The foster teens that we had always wanted to go back home. They always wanted to be with their parents. Like, there's a natural connection that's there. The reason I bring that up, you have a power to impact someone else's life that only you have. And if you don't do the work, then who will do the work? And you can talk about how unfair it is all day. First of all, if you're saying things are unfair, I hate to break this to you. You, my friend, are in the victim mentality. And healing does not happen in the victim mentality. Healing can only happen if we operate from the hero mentality, where we see opportunities rather than obstacles, and just see it as it is. It's a gift from the universe to heal. It's just, hey, I noticed you haven't healed from this yet. Here, let me give you a struggle that will help you heal from this thing that's been a burden and a weight your whole life.
And it's important, I think, to also acknowledge that it's not about changing, right? Like, you don't have to change to do this work. In fact, what you're doing is becoming more of who you really are.
Yeah. And that's actually why it gets so much easier, because you get to quit trying to be someone you're not and just authentically be who you're drawn to be. And one of the things I see all the time, so I work with a lot of parents that are like, we've tried everything. I have one mom. She's like, you saved us 40 grand because we're going to send our kid off to wilderness therapy. Usually it's the parents that are just completely desperate. They've tried everything and they just want things to just become bearable again. And one of the cool things that I've noticed over and over, parents will tell me things are better than I ever thought possible. And it starts from you. You change your point of reference and it will change everything.
If you want peace in your stepfamily, you must be that peace. And if you want love in your stepfamily, you must be that love.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up shortly, but I wonder if many parents listening here who have teens have this question, which I assume that they do. Word on the street is that teens don't like to talk a whole lot to their parents, that they more like to grunt and not answer. So for a parent who is prioritizing the development of a better relationship with their teenager. And if they're at the place maybe where their teenager doesn't have a whole lot to say to them, do you have any recommendations, tips, tricks, prompts that parents could use to kind of open that door to begin that relationship cultivation?
Yeah. So I have a course. It's called the Impact Parent Course. We talk about values. And I have this specific process. I'll just give you a brief overview. First, you have to know your own values so that you can then have the awareness to see other people's values. And if you take the time to better understand your values, and your results will show you your values. I'm 250 pounds, solid muscle. I wish there's a protective layer of fat over that muscle, but like that tells me my values. I value good food. I value relaxing. I value ease. Get to know your values so that you better understand your teen's values. When you better understand your teen's values, start trying to connect with your teen over their values. Humans used to do this naturally. I'll give you an example. One of my favorite pictures that Facebook reminds me of periodically, I have like one of my, probably a 2-year-old child on my lap watching football with me. Another one of my favorite memories is one of my young children on the sideline with at a football game where I'm coaching. My young children did not care about football at all. They cared about dad. And if dad cares about football, man, I care about football. They're just using my values to connect with me. You can do the same thing with your teen. Connect over their values. If their top value is smoking weed and you're like, I could never do that, go down the next two and find one that you're like, okay, that one. Go play Fortnite with your teen. You'll suck at it. It'll be a good role reversal. They'll have to save you and protect you, and it'll be awesome. But if you can understand how to connect over your teen's values, and the other thing that I will say, we have a misunderstanding about relationships. We kind of see this thing that's like, oh, well, I'm here, my teen's here, and in between us, that's the relationship. No, relationships are incredibly individual, which is weird because we think, no, it's like me and the other person. No, like I have a relationship with my teen. I'll give you an example. My 8-year-old, he's my best friend. He gets in trouble at school with his friends because they're like, hey, you're my number one best friend. And he's like, oh man, you're my number two. My dad's my number one best friend. We're just buddies. One night I was making him go to bed at a time that he thought was embarrassingly early. And he's like, dad, I don't want to go to bed. And I'm like, sorry, it's your bedtime. You're going to bed. And he's like, I hate you. You are the worst dad. And you're fat. He didn't like me in the moment. His relationship with me wasn't great in that moment. My relationship with him was as rock solid as ever. I'm like, man, that's okay. I still love you. I'm still your BFF. If you want an improved relationship with your teen, first improve your own relationship with yourself. But relationships exist in the mind. It's how we think. And it's how we feel about the other person. If you want to improve your relationship with your teen, improve how you think and how you feel towards your teen. When you do that, it will start to change how your teen thinks and feels about you. And then the other thing I would say, the word on the street is that kids don't want to talk to their parents, that they don't like their parents. Here's the truth. Your teen wants you to connect with them. And we're believing the stupid myth that, oh, well, teens hate their parents. They don't want anything to do with their parents. And we are missing opportunities. Your teen wants to connect with you, but they're not going to do the work. They want you to do the work. So take advantage of that opportunity. Trust that your teen wants to connect with you, and you be willing to connect with your teen. That's what I'd say.
And meet them where they are, meet them in their values, meet them in the things that are important to them. I just about, rolled over in my grave the day that I sat down with my stepson and asked him to show me the world he was building in Minecraft. But when I did sit down and show him the world he was building in Minecraft, I was like, you made this? You did this? Like from nothing? I was shocked. Like, these kids are geniuses. And sure, I can detest video games all I want, but I gained a whole new level of respect for him when I sat down and I looked at this Minecraft world that this kid built. I'm like, this is absolutely phenomenal.
And I guarantee you, he gained a whole new level of respect for you. It just, so that whole new level of respect, by the way, that's just fancy jargon for the way you looked at him, the way you perceived him changed. And I guarantee you, the way he perceived you changed that day. Find those opportunities. Those will connect you to your kids. It's values-based. It's you being who you want to be. And it's easy.
And I feel like I'm also making this distinction before we wrap up. Like, I can still have my convictions about, like, technology use by teenagers. I can still have my convictions about, like, I don't want my kids playing video games. Like, I can still believe that and connect with my stepson over video games. Like, I don't, oh, yeah. Like, it doesn't mean I'm sacrificing who I really am, because fundamentally what I also am really desiring is for a good connected relationship with somebody.
Yeah. And I would just say, like, if you hate video games and you're completely opposed, that might not be the value for you to connect on, and go find the other one. Like, do you guys have a favorite ice cream shop, or does he have a favorite sport? Like, don't do something out of alignment with who you want to be, hoping to build that connection, because you're not showing your child your real you. You're showing them a false version. If you can get past the video game stuff, awesome. If not, don't sweat it. There's a million other opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Very important distinction. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Ben Pugh, is there anything else that you would like to share with our parents, step-parents, co-parents, foster parents of teens, adoptive parents? What should we know?
Yeah, I'll just tell you, your teen won't ever tell you this, but thank you. They love you more than you realize. They need you. They don't expect you to be perfect as much as you think they do. So that, just pretend that's coming from your teen. The other thing, if you'd like to learn more, I try and make parenting as simple as I can and as easy as I can. You can go listen to my podcast. It's called Impact Parenting with Perspective. And my goal is to help as many parents and as many teens as I can. I know what it feels like to be a teen that everyone's kind of given up on. And if I can be the one that helps us collectively quit giving up on our teens and really believing in them, especially when they don't believe in themselves, that's what I'm here to do. So
that's so beautiful. It makes me feel a little bit emotional, to be honest. Thank you, Ben Pugh. I know that you gave us the link to your quiz and to your podcast, but if there's anywhere else that parents and or their teens can get in contact with you, follow you on social media, would you let us know where those places are?
Yeah, just benpughcoaching.com. That's my website. You can go to Facebook, Instagram, @benpughcoaching. You can find me. I'm on YouTube. Mainly I have teen followers because I say things like, if you're tired of fighting with your teen over screen time, so is your teen. There's a better way. And so, like, I do these witty little videos, but yeah, go follow me. I'm a real person. If you really need help, like, I have people all the time that listen to my podcast and email me or message me, and they're like, oh, this is what I'm struggling with. I'll get right back to you. I'll help you as much as I can. So.
Well, thank you, Ben Pugh, for your service, for your expertise. I imagine this will not be the last time that we are talking. If you are part of our group coaching program, Ben is going to be coming in and doing a teaching for us specifically. But it has been a pleasure, and I have lots of things to take away from this to think about. So thank you for helping me become more authentic as a parent with these reflections that you have provided for us. Thank you, Ben Pugh.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. This has been a blast. When you're chasing after what matters, your heart knows where to go. If the moon gives up rising,
the sun stops it shining, you know you'll have a hand to hold. As we wait on the timing, together we'll